It is exactly 6 minutes past the hour, a command performance, return engagement by popular demand. Dr. Courtney Craven is here, a very talented interventional cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. This is Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Courtney Craven. The topic this half hour is valve disease and repair, so very important half hour that we're going to spend. Let me tell you a little bit about our star doctor, interventional cardiologist Dr. Courtney Craven, is board certified in cardiovascular disease and nuclear cardiology. Dr. Craven earned her medical degree at DeBusk College of Osteopathic Medicine in Philadelphia after medical school. Dr. Craven completed a residency in internal medicine at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. She went on to complete both a fellowship in cardiology and interventional cardiology at Deborah Heart and Lung Center in Browns Mills, New Jersey. Dr. Craven's special interests include coronary intervention and peripheral vascular intervention. And Dr. Craven has participated in clinic research projects and authored articles in peer-reviewed medical journals. Dr. Craven, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me this morning, Harry.
It is a pleasure, and our topic is really important. So what is heart valve disease, doctor?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's kind of a broad question. Heart valve disease is really when one or more than one of your valves is not functioning properly, meaning it can either be stenotic or tight with calcium, not allowing blood to flow through, or it can be leaking. So blood can be actually flowing the opposite way than what it's supposed to be through the heart valve. And the severity of the valve disease can also range from mild all the way up to severe, which would be, you know, the most serious form of valvular heart disease.
And let me remind Dr. Craven's vast listeners, as the topic unfolds this half hour, that if you need to make an appointment, please do so. And I'll give you two ways to make the contact. If you prefer to call and speak to a human, it's perfectly available at 609-621-2080, and you'll be easily prompted to make an appointment, and you can pick that, that task when that is said to you on the phone. Or you can use any digital device and go on the web to demanddeborah.org, and you will see a hyperlink to scheduling an appointment. And you can't miss it. It's center cut right on the website, demanddeborah.org. Dr. Craven, what causes valve disease? And I'll just throw out lifestyle, genetics, all the above. How does this happen?
Yeah. You know, both. I mean, the answer really is a complex answer. When we kind of talk in the office about what caused valvular heart disease, there's two kind of columns. One would be modifiable causes, and then the other side would be non-modifiable or genetic causes. So sticking with the modifiable causes, things that will increase your risk of developing valvular heart disease, are really the risk factors for developing heart disease in general. So hypertension, you know, uncontrolled high blood pressure, that puts a lot of strain on the heart. So that can be a major cause. Smoking increases inflammation in the body. So that can certainly lead to, these valves are very, very delicate. So that inflammatory response over time can really break down these valves. Diabetes is another big one. Diabetes can definitely, aid in the progression of valvular heart disease. Also, high cholesterol, you know, as that cholesterol circulates in the body, it can degrade these valves over time. And then switching over to those non-modifiable or those genetic causes, some people are born with valvular heart disease and actually start getting their valvular heart disease surveyed at a very early age, and that's called congenital. Those are called congenital cases in which the patient is born with those abnormalities. If you have a family history of, you know, a family member, close family member that has valvular heart disease, you're also at a little higher risk of developing these valvular heart abnormalities, specifically, you know, with the aortic valve, but really with all four of the heart valves. And then non-modifiable would be aging. The aging process, will also increase our risk for developing valvular heart disease.
Which is perfect what you just did, because that's where I was going to go next. And those just joining our program, it's Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Courtney Craven, interventional cardiologist. And the topic this half hour is valve disease and repair. So you touched on aging. So my question is valve disease a disease of aging, or can anyone at any age develop this?
Yeah, this is a very important point. Valvular heart disease can happen and be identified at any stage of life. We do see valvular heart disease sometimes, in infants. Sometimes it doesn't present until, your fifth or sixth decade of life. But there is no age requirement for development of valvular heart disease. This is why it's so important to touch base, initially with your primary care physician, but then if there's any concern, any question, get in with a cardiologist, get a screening, because really, valvular heart disease does not discriminate by age.
Wild card question, because I've heard about this through the years, but I really don't know the difference between like urban legend and if there's anything, accurate about what I'm about to ask you. And it is this. I think I've heard where you could get some kind of infection or something and it can go to a heart valve. Do things like that happen to a perfectly normal, healthy person where they now have a valve issue because infection went to the valve?
Absolutely. That there's actually a well-documented term for that, rheumatic heart disease. So basically the pathophysiology, if you develop a bacterial infection that's not treated properly, which again can happen. I mean, over time, sometimes, we do have bacterial infections and they kind of subconsciously resolve. But if they're not treated properly with the proper antibiotics, the valve specifically, like I said before, there's such delicate structures, and those bacterial infections, if not treated properly, can actually attack and start to degrade that really delicate valvular structure. So yeah, that's actually very well documented, called rheumatic heart disease. We see it commonly when patients come in with a murmur and, we do an echocardiogram, and it's a very distinct look that we see on the echocardiogram. So yes, that is not urban legend.
One other wild card question. I'm going to double down now. Is there still a protocol that some people, when they go to the dentist and they're going to have a procedure, well, I'll say invasive, maybe some kind of extraction or who knows, something that's invasive enough where you take an antibiotic as you're doing that, maybe even right before and through the, the procedure, you continue on it. Is that still a protocol or is that not correct?
Yeah, we still do prophylax certain patients with antibiotics prior to certain dental procedures. That would really prevent endocarditis, which again is a precursor for valvular heart disease, but not necessarily like regular, valvular disease. But yes, we still do. The list of patients we recommend prophylaxis for has decreased over time. We're getting better and better at treating kind of these congenital cyanotic heart lesions. So that list of people that do require prophylactic antibiotics has gone down. But yes, that still is something that whenever you're going for a dental procedure, you should talk with your dentist, you should talk with your cardiologist and see if you, fit in that category to get that prophylaxis.
Valve disease and repair, the topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Courtney Craven, very talented interventional cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Dr. Craven, what are the risk factors for developing heart valve disease?
Yeah, good question. Much similar to things that can cause valvular heart disease. So I'll talk again about really important blood pressure control, diabetes control, cholesterol can be a risk factor, smoking, also heart attack. After patients have heart attacks, oftentimes the valves can become weak because the valves are connected to the heart muscle. And the valve can become weak, and you can notice more and more leaking or backwards flow of that blood through the valve. And then, like we just talked about, you know, infection on the valve, which is called endocarditis. So that's another risk factor for developing valve disease. And then rheumatic disease, that, you know, phenomenon that happens when bacterial infections are not treated appropriately. And then again, the number one risk factor is going to be age, you know, so just keeping aware of it, keeping it on your radar, and talking with your doctor. You know, that's kind of one of the things that we talk about in the office frequently at Deborah. So
it goes so fast. It's almost halftime. We're going to take our one and only break. Hard to believe I'm saying that, but I knew that it was going to happen because I remember the last time that we visited with Dr. Courtney Craven, and you are terrific. And it just goes so fast. It's a masterclass presentation. To make an appointment at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, simple to do. You can call 609-621-2080. I'll repeat, 609-621-2080. And I'm often the human Rolodex, so feel free. You can email me. You can reach out to me. And I always have these numbers right in my smartphone. And simple enough, if you want to do this on the web, at any digital device, demanddeborah.org. The question when we return for Dr. Craven is, what are the signs and symptoms of valve disease? Are people out there suffering in silence and they don't even know it? Or are there presentable signs and symptoms of valve disease that we should be on the lookout for? Dr. Craven will address that and much more when we return in just a few minutes. Don't go away. 22 minutes past the hour. It's my pleasure to present Dr. Courtney Craven, interventional cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. And the topic this half hour, it's a very important one, valve disease and repair. We left with a cliffhanger. For Dr. Craven, what are the signs and symptoms of valve disease? And I slipped in because I couldn't help myself. Is there a point in time where there is no sign or symptoms, but something is going on anyhow? Dr. Craven, take it away.
Yeah, signs and symptoms can be, you know, as subtle as, like, you know, some chest pain. Also, a big one is going to be shortness of breath in patients that progressively gets worse over time. Sometimes it can be as vague as worsening fatigue. You know, people are going through their lives and they're noticing activities they used to do without abnormalities. Now they're having more fatigue, having to stop more frequently. If valve disease is in the severe stages or the very progressed stages, patients can even present with passing out, episodes of suddenly passing out, which would be really on the spectrum of, you know, like I said, the valve would need to be addressed sooner rather than later. And then probably one of the biggest, you know, symptoms that we see is patients are admitted to the hospital with fluid overload, so congestive heart failure. And we go through, you know, our algorithm of what could be going on. And oftentimes we do find, you know, one of the valves is leaking or blood is going through the valve the opposite way. As cause of the fluid retention.
So important. Dr. Craven is addressing a very dynamic topic today, valve disease and repair on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. And again, to make an appointment, 609-621-2080 by phone, on the web at demanddeborah.org. Well, this is a biggie as well, Dr. Craven. How is valve disease diagnosed? What testing is involved?
The biggest modality we have to look at the heart in terms of the valves is ultrasound. So what that's called is an echocardiogram. It's, you know, like a 45-minute ultrasound movie of the heart. We make a movie of how the heart functions and how the blood flows through the heart. Obviously, nothing's going to take away from the physical exam, right? Coming into the office, coming to see us at Deborah and having us listen to your heart with our stethoscope, because that can be the first indication that there's a murmur that we hear. More advanced testing, you know, can include cardiac MRI, which we have at Deborah. We're happy to offer that as a, you know, modality. And then some more specialized echoes that we can look at the valve from different angles. So the main modality is going to be your ultrasound.
How is valve disease managed?
Yeah, really, we think about this in three columns. So, you know, when you talk with your doctor about your specific valve disease, sometimes you guys will come to the conclusion that you will manage this medically, right? So keeping you on the medicines, following up in the clinic, watching your symptoms. As the disease progresses, there are two ways to kind of fix valve disease definitively. One would be a surgical approach with a surgeon involved. And then the other would be percutaneous or minimally invasive approach, which would include a catheter, you know, usually through the groin. We would go in and fix these valves through the groin, either repair them or replace them actually now through the groin percutaneously. So that would be a non-surgical option.
We are visiting with Dr. Courtney Craven. The topic on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is valve disease and repair. This is, I don't want to scare anyone, but if left untreated, what happens?
Yeah, I mean, if left untreated, oftentimes we see patients are coming in and out of their, you know, they're in and out of the hospital, you know, getting fluid taken off the system, and lots of heart failure complications where the heart muscle cannot really stand that much, you know, abnormal flow across the valves, and can even lead to, you know, MI and death if not treated appropriately. So it's very important.
When do valves need to be repaired versus when do valves need to be replaced?
Yeah, usually, I mean, this is a good question, and this is definitely a question that is, requires a multidisciplinary approach. I mean, when we're approaching valvular heart disease, us cardiologists, we're going to talk with surgeons too and our echocardiographers. And usually when the structure of the valve, you know, is still intact, we can offer a repair option. Again, that means diagnosing this early, you know, getting in with your doctor, talking about it, getting an echo early on so that a repair is possible. But if the progression is so, you know, is in the severe range or so, you know, replacement is another very, very good option that usually will give patients a lot of relief. So it just depends on how the valve looks and also how many years the valve has been dysfunctional. So again, just a little plug to kind of get in early, talk about your symptoms real time with your doctor, and get this diagnosed as early as we can.
Dr. Craven, how do you decide, does the patient get involved if there's multiple ways? Like, for example, if you're replacing a valve, maybe it's a mechanical valve, maybe it's tissue, you know, all these different options. How do you decide what's the best option for the particular patient?
Yeah, I mean, certainly this is a conversation where the patient is involved in the conversation 100%. I mean, we do have a lot of different devices and also types of valves on the market now, which we're very fortunate to have, because we can actually replace your valve with something that fits your lifestyle.
There you go.
Okay, so this is important when you sit down and you tell your doctor, you know, some people are real risk takers and they like to do things like skydiving and running marathons and all of these very fun activities. So that would kind of depend on which valve they're going to decide to put in you because of the need for maybe a blood thinner. With a mechanical valve, a blood thinner would be recommended to you know, decrease the risk of forming clots in the valve later in life. So that is a conversation that probably the center of that conversation is going to be the patient and their lifestyle. And then we're able to pick now, fortunately, a valve that will fit with them and also grow with them, you know, grow with the patient and not be a hindrance, but really be an addition to make their life better.
Dr. Courtney Craven on valve disease and repair continues. Hard to believe we're down to about our last 6 minutes or so. And you did talk about a procedure. You talked about it, you know, able to be minimally invasive and go through the groin and things like that. But let me, as a standalone question, ask you, Dr. Craven, what minimally invasive procedures are available for valve disease repair and replacement?
Yeah, Deborah specifically, we have a lot of minimally invasive procedures. We call them percutaneous procedures. Probably the one that most of you have heard of the most is the, it's called TAVR. It's a transcatheter aortic valve replacement. It's probably our biggest procedure. Most patients will present with aortic valve calcium or aortic valve stenosis. Along the same lines, we also have a transcatheter tricuspid valve replacement. Again, both of those would actually be replacing the valve, not a repair. And then more along the lines of repairing, we do have small clips that can go in through the groin and actually clip a leaky valve as to tighten it up. If you can imagine, that clip just tightens it up, like you're tightening up a bag if you clip it or something like that. And then we have transcatheter edge-to-edge repairs, and also we can also clip the tricuspid valve. So really any of the heart valves we can repair percutaneously or minimally invasively or through the groin, you know, at this stage in our medical advancements, which is awesome.
If you do have either mechanical or tissue valve, and for those listening, a variety of different ways, the pig valve, cow valve, and I know a little bit just from doing the shows with you, Dr. Craven, about all the possibilities and such. But how long does that last? Is that a once in the rest of your life, or see me in 10 years, or what? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a very individual question. I mean, you know, depending on the patient's risk factors or, you know, other things that are going on with their medical history, obviously valves that are put in can last, you know, anywhere between like 6 years all the way up to 15 years. You know, it's a very, very individual type of situation per patient, requiring follow-up with your doctor and routine echocardiograms even after the valve is replaced. But with these percutaneous or minimally invasive valves, we do have, you know, we're getting some long-term data now, and they're actually functioning, you know, very well, you know, on longitudinal studies. So, you know, really the valves, they're not going to last forever. I mean, it is going to require you to follow up. And at that point when, you know, there is conversation about having them replaced, again, those non-invasive interventions can be discussed at that juncture, you know, 10, 15 years down the line.
Wow. So good. Now, do you recommend, do folks see you once a year once they have the valve replacement? How often do they need to see you?
Yeah, I mean, initially, the follow-up is going to be a little more frequent. You know, we're going to want to see you usually 4 months, and then kind of graduate to every 6 months, so twice a year.
Okay.
Usually getting an ultrasound or some type of surveillance. Definitely if your symptoms are changing, but at kind of 2 year intervals, just to follow up on what the valve's doing, how it's functioning in the heart. I personally like to see patients every 6 months. I just think, you know, a lot can happen in 6 months. So I just like touch base with them, make sure they're still feeling okay, and catch changes earlier on.
I love that, because you know where they were 6 months ago. Now you know where they're at 6 months later when you see them. Hard to believe, but we are down to the 2-minute drill. What is the recovery process after valve repair?
It's getting better and better by the day. You know, these percutaneous procedures, I'll tell you, that we do at Deborah, we are sending patients home oftentimes the next morning from these minimally invasive procedures. Surgical approach, there's a short hospital stay, usually, you know, 5 days or so, and just so we can monitor, you know, how the new valve is getting situated in the heart. But the minimally invasive option, really these patients are up on their feet, they're getting back to their normal activities and doing physical therapy and things like that the day after, which is phenomenal, because getting you up and about is, that's the most, that's the thing that we look at the most to tell how you're going to do long term with the valve. So really recovery is, like I said, getting better and better every day, but we're getting you out of the hospital and back to your surroundings the day after.
That is amazing. Final minute final question. Are there any new treatments or innovations that are available for valve disease that you haven't had a chance to mention yet?
I mean, new things coming down the pike. Probably there's some devices that are smaller. They're able to be, you know, put in through a smaller hole in the groin, which we're very excited about. Every couple of years, they come out with new generations of these valves, which are very exciting to us. Because they just fit in the heart better, and you know we're also seeing that they're gonna hold up for longer in patients. So whether it be an aortic valve replacement, a tricuspid valve replacement, that clip I was talking about, you know they're getting smaller, they're getting better acclimated to the heart faster. Also devices where you don't have to be on blood thinners for as long. So very cool things on the horizon to look forward to.
Isn't the heart an amazing muscle? I mean, all of a sudden it's like, hey, look at this new thing I got in here. And it just adapts, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. Yep.
So great to visit with you, Dr. Craven.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me this morning.
It is a pleasure. Look forward to next time. To make an appointment, simple to do, 609-621-2080 or on the web at demanddebora.org. The great Courtney Craven, Dr. Courtney Craven, interventional cardiologist with just a masterclass. If you've missed any, please check it when the podcast is available. Please check it out because it was a great 30 minutes on this important topic.